years came is separation from a pure devoted Christian. Because Brahmanda Brahmide, we have been wandering upariyala, up and down in this material world, lifetime after lifetime. We've been hankering after happiness, satisfaction, peace of mind, knowledge, trying to understand what it's all about, what it's like, who am I. We've suffered various kinds of karma, sometimes being born as a low animal in the street, sometimes being born as a demigod, sometimes having everything and in the same life losing it all. We've suffered from disease. We've suffered from old age. We've suffered from rebirth. We've suffered so much. And when you finally get the association, Lava Matra Sadhu Sanghi, even for a short period of time, you can reawaken your dormant Krishna Prema, love of God. Love of God is not foreign to us, you see. We all have a propensity to love. You don't have to teach a child how to love his mother, father. It comes very naturally. And love of Krishna is the ultimate love. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. Satya Kavunoy, Satya, that is already there in us. Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Koraye Udaya. Simply by chanting and remembering, glorifying, praying to, serving, our spontaneous love is awakened. And this begins when we meet a great devotee, a pure devotee, like Srinivasacharya, like Raghunath Das Goswami, like Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, like Krishna Das Kavikar Goswami, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, like Narottam Das Thakur, like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, like our Srila Prabhupada. So when we lose their association, we feel cheated. We have the opportunity and now we feel that we lost it. But we feel weak. We can't go on. Raghunath Das Goswami was Raghunath. He was the son of a very wealthy landowner, Zamindar. Zamin means land, Zamindar, landowner. It's an Urdu word. Anyhow, northern India was invaded by the Persians. They influenced the language. They couldn't influence the culture very much. The language they did, India's kind of kitchery of Sanskrit and Urdu and Farsi and various things. It's funny, the Gurukula kids in Mayapur, they had a joke about Hindi. The real language of India is Sanskrit, but in northern India they speak Hindi, and the Gurukula kids call it the donkey language. Because you're always saying, ing-ah, ing-ah. pure Shuddha, Kadivoli, that Shuddha Indian, that is mostly Sanskrit. But anyway, Raghunath Das was the son of a very wealthy zamindar. And Raghunath, from an early age, very early age, as a young child, teenager, he wanted to leave home and go and associate with sadhus. He was born in a rich family, and this is explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, that a yoga brashta, someone who doesn't complete his path in a certain lifetime, he doesn't lose. He's never the loser. Tyakva svadharmam charanam bhujamarer vajana pakvota patetato yadi yatra kvava vadrama buddha mushi kim kovartu atam vajatam svadharmata. The same thing as the Bible. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? So this verse is saying that if someone gives up his swadharma or his occupational work and takes his spiritual life but doesn't complete it, there's no loss. Because in his next life, he starts again. But someone who does his occupational duties perfectly, what is the value? He takes birth again in the material world and he has to take birth according to his purva karma and according to his swadharma activities. He probably committed so many sins. Just like a businessman. A businessman will tell you, sir, for you, I make no profit. But without making profit, how can you be in business? So he's lying. What to speak of to other businessmen, they tell it to us when we go there and ask for a donation. Swamiji, I'm not making any profit on this. Come on, I wasn't born yesterday. But, so, according to their karma, they do their occupational work, but they have to suffer. But a devotee, someone who tries his best, not a devotee necessarily, but someone who's on a spiritual path, if they don't complete, they get another chance in the next lifetime. Suchinam Srimadange Yoga Brashta Vijayate. They're called Yoga Brashta, and they, in the next birth, they're either born in a wealthy family, so they have no material problems, so they can take up spiritual life. A very, very poor man, all he can think of is roti, kapra, or makan. All he can think about is how to get tomorrow's meal. So it's hard for him to take the spiritual life. But a wealthy man, he has time to think. Actually, the hippies, they renounced the world. And most of them were from middle or upper middle class families, or even upper class families. Poor families. You won't find any hippies in India, or very few. Those who are hippies are called sadhus. But you won't find many hippies because they couldn't afford it to go and sit in Goa or in that beach in Trivandrum or whatever. So, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe, a wealthy man or a pious Brahmin family. And Prabhupada said about himself that he was very fortunate to be born in a wealthy family. His father, his family was part of the Mullick family. Related to the Mullick family in Calcutta, which is a very, very wealthy family. They had a whole road named after them, and they had their own big temple, and everybody in their family lived near the temple of Prabhupada, worshipped in that temple when he was a young boy. And his father was also very learned, not exactly Brahman, and he was Kayas, but practically Brahman. Very pious man. So he got both opportunities. And Raghunath Das was born in a very wealthy family, but he wanted to renounce the world, and what happened? His parents stopped him. Sound familiar? It's happened many times in our preaching. Not only in ISKCON, but the Catholics also have the same problem. Even some Protestant churches have the same problem. Wherever, especially where there are priests or monks or whatever. So Raghunath Das tried many times to leave home, but his parents actually put guards around his room. And his father hired the guards. But finally, he escaped and got free, and he went to Vrindavan. He served Mahaprabhu and all the Vaishnavas there. And because he was from a wealthy family, you know, he finally phoned home and told Dad, "I'm over here." I didn't have any phones. Maybe send a telex, a Morse code or something. But anyway, his father used to send him regularly a monthly allowance, a large amount of money. So Raghunath Das, he would spend that and hold a big feast for all the Vaishnavas. I remember once I was in Mayapur. This is in 1972-73. So Bhavananda was in charge there, and I'd come from Europe, and from London. I was a big book distributor, and we had been sent to London to train the devotees up there, Pujimanta and myself. And so, you know, I had a pocket full of change. When I came to India, I had money or something. So he learned that I had money, and he insisted that I give it to him. A brahmachari should not have money. So I was very stubborn. I wasn't going to give it to him. So I went out and spent all the money on sweets and had a big feast for all the devotees. It was my determination not to surrender. But anyway, that wasn't Raghunath Das. Raghunath Das was very happy to spend all the money on the Vaishnavas. But then gradually, he began to realize that maybe that wasn't the proper standard, that he should be more renounced. So he gave that up, and he became a mendicant beggar. And he used to sustain himself, maintain himself, by begging from shop to shop, or here and there, whatever he would get. Called the Bhiksha. It was called the Bhiksha. Someone who begs and lives by that. But then after some time he thought, that's not very good. I'm taking false shelter of other people. I should only depend on the Lord. So then he went to the temple of Jagannath, he went to Jagannath Temple, and it's obviously not in Vrindavan. And whatever scraps or whatever was thrown out from the temple, he would live on that. There was a drain coming out of the temple, and whatever the cooks would, after they finished their cooking, they'd wash the pots, and the water would carry grains and things out. So Raghunath would gather up those grains, and he'd eat that. But then after some time, he thought, this is too opulent. So then, he found out that the cows, whatever came out of the drain, would be fed to the cows in the field. So he would go in the field, and whatever was left after the cows had eaten off and outer core of the rice, the inner core, the hard core, that, you know, was not eating. He would live on that. Renunciation, personified. So one day Mahaprabhu heard about his renunciation, and he went there, surprised Raghunatha. He said, "Oh, you're having a feast, and you didn't invite me," and he grabbed some of that. You know, I don't know, I guess you could call it the rice for supper. And he began to eat it with Raghunatha. He was very alarmed. But anyway, Raghunatha eventually went to Vrindavan, and he joined the other six Goswamis, who were the chief disciples of Mahaprabhu, and he lived on the bank of Radhakunda, chanted daily. There are some nice stories about him. He didn't even have a kutir, a house. He would just chant in the hot sun. And the sun was beating down on his head. It was very hot in the summer in Vrindavan. Very, very, very cold in the winter and very hot in the summer. The rest of the year is nice. But the summer means April, May, and part of June. June too, I guess. Monsoon starts a little later, but he was out in the sun and was beating down on his head while he was doing his sadhana. And one day, Sanatana Goswami came and saw him. And Sanatana saw Radharani come. And she took her sari, part of her sari, and held it over the head of Raghunatha. Sanatana was very angry, and he chastised Sanatana Goswami that you build yourself a kutir.
Huh?
Raghunatha.
Huh?
You said Sanatana chastised Sanatana.
No, Sanatana chastised Raghunatha. That you build yourself a kutir. So Radhakami doesn't have to give you service. So he eventually did that, or his disciples did that. And he chanted constantly the holy names. So we can never achieve that. But at least he is an emblem for us. He is a target. We should go in the direction of renunciation of the world. In fact, I have a verse today that I wanted to read, which I probably won't get time to read, but it's about renunciation. Then Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, he was the son of Tapan Mishra. And Tapan Mishra was a brahmana who lived in Banaras, Varanasi, or Kashi. And whenever Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went there, there were very few pure Vaishnavas. Banaras was the seat of Mayavada philosophy. In fact, Mahaprabhu, he stayed with Tapan Mishra. So Raghunatha Bhatta was his son, and Raghunatha Bhatta also, because Mahaprabhu was staying with Tapan Mishra, he got attracted to him, and one day he gave up his occupation and everything and went in search of Mahaprabhu. He met him in Puri and stayed with him for 8 months, and he became very, very attached, and he served him, cooked for him. He had his own apartment there, Govinda Das, Mahaprabhu's secretary, arranged for accommodations for him. And he got very, very attached, but after 8 months, he had to return home. So Mahaprabhu told him, "You go home, you take care of your aged mother and father." Now hear this. He told him to go home and take care of his aged mother and father, who were devotees. He You tell them to go home and take care of your demon parents. He said, because your parents are devotees, you should serve them. So a Vaishnava can serve other Vaishnavas, especially his parents. But it's another thing to serve parents who are not so devoted, or who don't have the same habits, can't follow the regular principles. And you have to serve them in separation. But anyway, he did that, and about 4 years later they died. And then he went back to Mahaprabhu, spent another 8 months with him, and then Mahaprabhu sent him to Vrindavan. Raghunathpata. There's two Raghunaths, Raghunath Das and Raghunathpata. Goswami, they're both Goswamis. Then Krishna Das Kaviraj, of course, is the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was very, very old when he wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he did not have direct association with Mahaprabhu, but he learned about Mahaprabhu's pastimes and compiled Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'm reading a verse from the Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, 14th verse. Atha kumbir dvija shresta varna shrama vibhasa svanusitasya dharmasya samsidhir kavitoshnam. O best among the twice born is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation, according to caste divisions and orders of life, is to please the personality of Godhead. So, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada talks a little bit about Varnashram Dharma, and in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna does say that any society naturally has divisions. There are intellectuals, there are more martial type people who are either soldiers or they're managers of some type, big managers. They're called Kshatriyas, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas. There are people, I know people, I live in New York. Prabhupada once said, I am the Jewish guru. So many of his first disciples were from New York, from that background. And they have very intelligent boys. Because some of our biggest leaders to this day. But they're also very expert at business. I remember Gargamuni. He was one of Prabhupada's first disciples. And he went to India and was preaching there. And he and I preached together, making life members. And he would tell you, there's a business caste from Rajasthan, a particular area of Rajasthan called Marwad, and Marwadis. So they're very, very expert in business. The wealthiest people in India, the Birlas, the Bangurs, the Singhanias, there's so many examples. Kirkhoon used to always tell them, I am American Marwadi. In other words, he was Jewish. Same thing. So there are people who are just inclined to business. They can't lose, you know. They're always thinking how to turn things into money. And then there are people who just naturally natural for them to sit in an office. They're more happy when they're out digging a ditch or hauling the garbage. It's not a question of one class. Prabhupada talks about that here. It's not a question of dominating one over the other. Artificial predominance over the weaker section. That's not what it's about. People have natural tendencies, and they should cooperate together so that there's proper division of labor. You can't have people who are inclined to reading and studying and out digging ditches. It just doesn't work. It's not their proper activity, and vice versa. So, ultimately, it doesn't matter what you do. Ultimately, what is important is described here, sansiddhir haditoshanam, the highest perfection. Siddhi means perfection. Like yogis, they attain different types of perfection. But sansiddhir, the highest perfection of life, no matter what you do anywhere, whether you become the biggest sports hero, the biggest dancer, the biggest artist, the biggest politician, whether you become president of the United States, or whatever it is, the ultimate, highest perfection of life is to please God. We all have to please someone. Every one of us ultimately owes allegiance to someone higher. Hastani sahastana. Those without hands are food for those who have hands. Sahastana. Apadani, those without legs. Chatushpadam are food for those with four legs. Falguni tatra mahatam jivo jivasya jivanam. One living being, the general rule of nature, is one living. The weak are ruled by the strong, or one living being is ruled for another. There's a system there, a natural system. And we are, in one sense, transcendental to the whole thing, but as long as we're in the material world, we have to act according to the system that is here. Then we can be happy here. If we buck the system, if we try to go against the system, against our situation within the modes of material and nature, karnam guna sangosya sada sad yoni janma, so we've gotten this body because of our situation. Modes of nature. You have the color of hair you have right now. You have the kind of eyes, ears, nose, body, mentality. Everything is according to your past association with the modes of sattvas, rajas, and tamaguna. That's why you have this body. What you desired and what was your karma, now you have the result. And if you stop trying to reject it or fight it, but try to do what you're actually meant to do, and that's please God, please the Lord, the Supreme Person, the Parameshwar, the Supreme Controller, the Supreme Enjoyer, Bhogaisvara. You see, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. Suridam, he's our friend, our dearmost friend. We try to please him, and then we'll be happy. As far as Varnashram is concerned, there's relevance there. It could help us to organize society in a certain way, but it's not ultimately Varnashram. It's not the highest goal. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discussed with Ramananda Roy. Actually, Ramananda Roy was speaking. Mahaprabhu was asking questions, but Ramananda Roy was feeling like, I'm just being used as a puppet. You're the puppeteer. Because you're asking me questions, but you're also inspiring me with the answers. So, Mahaprabhu asked him, what is the highest occupation of a living being? And Ramananda Roy first answered, Varnashram Dharma. Varnashrama Charva. Charvata Purushena Para Kumar. Varnashram Dharma is for human beings. So Ramananda Roy mentioned it, but Mahaprabhu didn't like that. That suggestion is good, but there's much more than that. Go on. And then Ramananda Roy said, renunciation of material attachment. Become detached, renounce. And Mahaprabhu agreed, yes, that's higher than just being in Varnashram, but it's not perfect, it's not complete. What Ramananda Roy said was that we should work within whatever we do, but yad karoshi yad asnasi yad juhosi tadasi yad yad tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurusha madharpana. Krishna says, whatever you do, doesn't matter. Yad karoshi yad, whatever you eat, tadasi yad, whatever you give away, yad juhosi, whatever, it should be done as an offering to me, finally. Not to the demigods, not to your family, not to the patriots, your forefathers. Everything should be done always as the Supreme Lord. Mahaprabhu rejected that, and then Ramananda Roy said renunciation of the whole Varnashram idea and taking to devotional service. You might think, well, oh, that's it. Taking to devotional service. That's the answer. But Mahaprabhu wanted more. He liked that answer, devotional service. But he said there's more. And then finally, Ramananda Roy said, in the association of devotees, constantly glorify the Lord, katyantascha, mam nityam tusham, charvamam nityam. That's what the six Goswamis were doing in Vrindavan. And tasmade kina manasa bhagavan sattatam pati srotavya kintatvascha vyeya pujascha nityada. With one pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of devotees. So, vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha guru nandana, with fixed attention. Chanting casually the names of the Lord will give casual results. There's definitely even Namabhasa where people, Hare Krishna, look at those templars. Baldy, templar, bald head. Even someone's making a joke. That's okay. But they're saying Krishna's name, so they're getting tricked. Even when you see Ramada in, you're seeing Rama, there's some benefit there. Wherever you see the syllables Krishna or Rama, it's beneficial, even if it appears in the middle of another word, like we have over here, Auto Rama. One of our devotees has a car business called Auto Rama. People are getting spiritual benefit. Indirectly, but it's beneficial. But obviously, the highest thing is to satatam kirtayantam, to constantly glorify the Lord with fixed attention. Then you begin to go deeper and deeper into the matter. Once I was at a big concert hall, and the Nuchalota, it was a Nuchalota concert. Have you heard of a Nuchalota? The bhajan singer. Anyway, they asked me to speak in the middle of it. It was a whole, he was singing ghazals. He wasn't singing bhajans. He was singing ghazals, which are Hindi love songs, cinema love songs. I love you, you. It's all the same. It's never been different, you know, over the last 10,000 years. Classical, oldies but goldies, it's all the same stuff. Let's spend the night together. But anyway, they went there to hear bhajans, and Anum Jalote had me come and give a little talk. It was rough because the audience was very impatient. They wanted to get back to the guzzles. He was taking a break. I'm not a type of guzzling beer either. But I told them, I said, look, you're all enjoying these songs, but for me, I don't know what you're enjoying. Because it's in Hindi, and I know a little tutti-frutti Hindi, but I can't understand what Anoop is singing. But maybe if I could understand the language a little better, I could enter into it more deeply. So if you really want to understand bhakti yoga, if you really want to understand devotional service, you have to go a little deeper. You have to try to study Bhagavad Gita, you have to associate with devotees, inquire submissively, and you have to take shelter of Krishna. A devotee always does that. Okay, I'll end there because we're going to have, in honor of Raghunath Das Goswami and Raghunath Bhatta Goswami and Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, we're going to have a little cultural performance this evening. One devotee has prepared some very nice dancing. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam.